This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
And it gives you a reason to have a conversation because it's based on a capability that the client doesn't have.
Right.
And agencies prosper when they do things that the clients can't do.
Welcome everyone to the Fuel Podcast Christmas Special, and I'm a Smith called Keith. This show is sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, and if you want to make sure your agency weathers another serious business interruption, then one form of insurance you can take out is a subscription to The Advertist. It's a delicious oven-ready new business feast in a can, just add talented new business people. Trusted by the new business agency industry to help it navigate things like GDPR, Brexit, pandemics and the like, The Advertist has been serving agencies since 2007. And if you need a cost-effective way of monitoring news, data, people moves, tenders, new business alerts and lists, then there's no better platform. Just call the team on 0203 356 3717 and ask for a free trial. In the meantime, let's get on with the show. We're still talking about new business, we're still helping people get in shape for a post-pandemic business world, but obviously, we have a special Christmas theme. So before we go any further, I bet you're dying to find out how Jeremy Davis's new business version of A Christmas Carol concludes. So here we go. Part 3 of A Christmas Cold Call.
Sam stumbled back to his desk, still unheeded by his colleagues, who seemed to look through him as though he were a ghost. Hesitantly, he opened his email inbox and clicked on an email headed, Christmas Present. It read, I am the ghost of Christmas Present. Annoyed, Steve typed his reply. Is this a wind-up? You could at least have come to the office. Immediately, a response pinged into his inbox. It's 2020, it read. I'm working from home. And I'm not happy about having to work in March anyway. It's well outside my normal remit. Usually I only work in the run-up to Christmas Eve. If it weren't for those pesky clients and their brand planning cycles, I'd be on a beach in the Seychelles. This never happened back in Scrooge's day. Anyway, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter, covering all aspects of marketing in the automotive trade. People moves, mergers, acquisitions, everything you need to equip you for prospecting in the sector. But we don't target automotive, Steve said aloud. You could at least have done your research. This is just spam. With an almighty ping that left his ears ringing, the response arrived in his inbox. Well, it read in caps. Now you know how your prospects feel. Suddenly, all went quiet again. Everything froze, and the world once again took on that monochrome tinge of suspended reality. The deafening silence was broken after a moment by a faint clatter from the desk of Debbie from accounts, where Sam could see a copper coin had fallen to the floor. Even he could appreciate the cheesy symbolism of the penny dropping. With clunky metaphors like that, maybe we have a chance of landing the John Lewis Christmas ad after all, Sam thought, because he was, first and foremost, a new business guy. Then Debbie rose from her desk, looking suddenly more assertive. Realization dawned on Sam with the inevitability of a grey and rainy Christmas morning in Britain. That's right, Sam, Debbie began, before he could speak. I'm the ghost of Christmas future. But you can call me boss, because that's what I'm going to be around here with my commitment to making sure the numbers add up. And here's your P45. What? Sam stammered. I've conducted a thorough year-end review of our new business activity, and I'm afraid your effectiveness just hasn't met expectations. Your insistence on cold calling and failure to harness the rich sources of marketing and new business intelligence and data that's available to you has led me to conclude that you have no future at such a dynamic and growth-focused agency as this one. Sorry, Sam, you're fired. No, squealed Sam in desperation. Don't do it, Debbie. I can change. I'll do my homework. I'll read the papers. I'll even go to networking events. And I promise I'll never make another cold call. Debbie fixed him with a steely glare. It's not too late to change the future. You've got until Christmas. And with that, she vanished. Sam was suddenly back in his seat, the office just as noisy as normal as the phone continued to ring. Sam slammed it down and leapt from his chair, knocking over a whole pile of pennies one of the account directors had been keeping on her desk until she had enough of them to afford a flat white. "I'm sorry," he yelled manically. "Let me pick those up for you. I'm a changed man." "Pardon," she replied uncertainly. "Sorry, it's an overly contrived Christmas carol gag," he babbled as he gathered up the fallen coins. Then he turned to the MD. "Right, I've had an epiphany. I've been doing this all wrong. I'm going to write a 12-month business development plan that's strategically aligned with our business objectives and positioning and leverages our core strengths in key horizontals. We need better intel, more compelling content, and a more joined-up approach to optimizing our network and generating more referrals to improve our conversion rate. So I'm going to put together a fully costed proposal for overhauling our prospect database and subscribing to market intelligence tools like The Advertist, which will better enable us to identify emerging areas of opportunity and develop an effective new business culture." The MD regarded him solemnly, downed his double espresso, and cracked his knuckles meaningfully. "Get back on the phone," he replied.
So welcome to the Fuel Podcast Christmas special. There is a seasonal twist, but most of the show's fit for consumption any other time of the year. Now, I've been reading a fascinating book by Malcolm Gladwell called Talking to Strangers, and it uncovers an interesting fact that for the last 200 years, the human race has been trying to undo what tens of thousands of years of evolution's taught us about trusting people. That we trust people when we know we shouldn't, and we fail to read the obvious signals. The fact has significance in the world of new business because we thrive on initiating contact with strangers and becoming trustworthy people. One of the best practitioners of this is our treasured US correspondent, Hank Blank, a man with a black book of connections that most of us could only dream of. So let's get him back on the show pronto. Welcome back, Hank.
Thank you, Keith.
And a Merry Christmas.
Malcolm Gladwell. And a Merry Christmas to you too.
Yes, Malcolm Gladwell. Do you read his stuff? Do you?
Yes, he's Canadian, so you know,
well,
and he writes stuff. And he follows another great Canadian called Marshall McLuhan.
Yes,
and he wrote, you know, he in the '60s it was a school for him, and he did, you know, it's a virtual village. People said, "What are you talking about?" And now we're connected to people all around the world. You know what I mean? I talk to people in different countries, read different papers. And he said, TV is hot, print is cool. I think that was, anyway, another great philosopher. So, yes, Merry Christmas to you. A different Christmas this year. And it certainly is. But, you know, it's I'm ready to go. And share some thoughts with your listeners.
You're ready for 2021 now, are you?
I'm looking forward to 2021. I'm looking forward to vaccines. That's
yes.
What I'm really looking forward to.
We'll jump onto that in a minute. But I was just going to – one of the things I did sort of touch on there was the fact that you have a black book. I always imagine that you have a black book and stuff. Do you keep a notebook or anything? Do you write in journals still anymore?
Oh, yes, I keep up. Yeah, for sure. I have one here, right here. I can hold up. But I have, you know, I have, you know, my Rolodex. I used to have cards, you know, binders full of networking cards, right? But that became a little inefficient. But my black book is my LinkedIn connections because, you know, and
what would you do if that went down?
Well, I have it backed up, but, you know, because from years of networking, you know, people, I have 28,000 connections and people say, "How do you get that?" And I said, "You do something for a long time and you do it often." Right. So I'm a person, you know, I used to say, you know, it's a little like Malcolm Gladwell said, you know, I used to tell people, you know, we're all zombies in the line at Starbucks, or we used to be looking at our phones, not engaging with the people in front of us. And you don't know whether the person in front of you is the president of a bank. And if you said something, you know, something could come out of it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
So, yeah, I'm a big believer in talking to strangers, you know, and so, but I wanted to share some things with you.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, we can go with that. I mean, because obviously people have been you've been polling them for their reactions and their thoughts and feelings about what's been going on. So just jump straight in. So what's your take on what's been happening?
There's a pulse. You know, I'm going to share some things from some agencies and then from some clients. And,
okay.
You know, we can, you know, so I talked to a fellow of mine that works at a large agency here in Orange County. Like when I say large, probably one of the largest because they handle a national for sure automotive account. Right.
Right.
And so very, very large. And he was sharing about new business. And I want to ask people, you know, what's it like out there? And he said that actually they were doing really, really well. It was different. Many clients were coming to them for smaller projects, not big AOR assignments, but, you know, they're doing work, which is stimulating and invigorates people. It really reminded me after the last recession, you know, people, when it started to get better, people didn't throw money out there. They just did little test projects, probably to validate that things work, prove to their bosses that the investment was worthwhile.
Right.
But he shared to me what is very much like the new normal. They pitched a large insurance company and they got the business. And the funny thing is that he shared, you know what? They pitched the business, they won the business, they presented the work, and they produced it all and got it on air. And these people run on network television, this client, without having an in-person meeting.
Wow.
You know, it was all done virtually, you know, and they said, you know, the pandemic creates a lot of firsts. And that's kind of the way the pitching is. Another interesting thing about this story, I asked a new business person, how did you get that account? And they said, well, that client used to be with another agency that closed its offices. They went and looked at the client roster and reached out to all of them. One responded, but the one that responded was the one that they did this work for.
Wow. That's a typical sort of very aggressive new business approach to do that, isn't it? But
yeah,
I mean, that's the way it works. So, I mean, do you think, okay, so let's extrapolate that and say that there are thousands more companies working the same way with agencies. I mean, are we ever going to get back to a point where we need to speak to, you know, see each other in person again?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think most people will acknowledge that personal interaction, you know, is important. You know, it's like, you know, when people talk about storytelling over the last 10 years, you know, that's been really important. You know, that's a primal need that we have, interaction. It's, you know, storytelling is like sitting around campfires, you know, at night, talking to people, sharing legacy, sharing history. And I think that the human touch, most 99% of the people that I meet, you know, they say, yeah, they miss the human touch for sure.
Right.
You know, and it's the interaction.
I was going to say, so what your correspondent has given you basically is just proof that it is possible to do it, but not that that's going to be a normal way to do it, but that it can be done, right?
Right. Because you know what? We were at a big trade show last year, KBiz. It's kitchen and bath. So you can imagine all appliance people are there. I was there with MTech Esso Abloy that makes door fixtures, locks, you know, huge in Vegas, you know, busloads and busloads and busloads of people. You could get lost. You know, size of 2 football fields. And it's going to be virtual this year. And another thing he shared to me, because we talked about that, it's going to be virtual. You have to react and adapt because it's different. So they're creating a 3D virtual booth. And I've heard about a couple other agencies doing this using CGI imagery,
right?
You know, and they did a new design guide that can be downloaded. And I know, you know, so you have to react in a different way as an agency. You know, you have to go and say, okay, these trade shows used to be there. They're great places to meet clients and prospects. They're not going to be there. They're going to be virtual. Okay, so what can I sell to my program? You know, or having that idea, they can go to virtually any other client in any other sector saying, you know, you're going to have, you know, whatever, NAMM, you know, the music shows coming up in 5 months. It'll probably be virtual. Here's a tool that we did. And it gives you a reason to have a conversation because it's based on a capability that the client doesn't have.
Right.
And agencies prosper when they do things that clients can't do.
That's wise words. Definitely wise words. So, I mean, any other feedback you've had?
I talked to another agency and I said, hey, are you, again, you know, are you getting business? And they are. But he says it's tough. Here's what he shares. Clients want more. And again, this reminds me of the last recession, the emergence from the last recession. Money's definitely a factor, but they want more. And, you know, and sometimes the execution can be challenging because they often want you to maximize the use of any of their resources. So they might want you to include if they have creative people, you know, can they be involved, you know? So it's tough. It's tough that way. It's not easy. It's not shooting fish in a barrel. And, you know, and I know I got an email from somebody else that, you know, he actually went to the client side and his agency didn't survive this year. And right. He said his clients all started to cut their budgets and my agency didn't survive. You know, it's some people are pivoting to a new world. It's tougher, but it is. They're still getting projects. The first example was the innovation. Now, on the client side, I did reach out to them. And I'll tell you, my whole conclusion from this is personalization. It isn't mass emails. This is from a client who works for they do building products. And he used to be on the agency side. And he said, you know what? You know, he gets approached by tons of agencies, he says. Most of it is by email. And it's like they send the same email to 1,000 people and they change the name on top. That is a turnoff for me. You know, he says he's confused on the type of services they're trying to sell. And he says anytime it's personalized or they can drop a name of somebody referred that, you know, maybe it was a mutual connection, that helps.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I probably, says I'll finish with this, I probably delete 5 to 10 daily from a totally random person trying to get my business. And it's clear that they haven't done any homework and I'm just on a list. You know, that's what agencies say. You know, I'm really busy. And I wrote a blog about this. And it said, and I think we're all guilty of that. I'm guilty of it. I think it's the elixir of the chase, right? I contacted all these people. I'm going to try to convert them. You know, it's like, and they're, you know, and but they're strangers. And your chances of converting them are very, very low. You know, and I said, what gets the most new business? It's referrals. And I remember that. But I'm guilty of this, too. When he talks about the mass blast, if you will, you think you've accomplished a lot. But you really haven't, you know, you really, really haven't.
Certainly not not these days. I mean, I think probably that may have held true, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. But I think that, you know, certainly from where we are, from my perspective with the Advertist, is that, you know, and we're in the data game. I mean, you know, there's no two ways about it. We're in the data game. We you know, our clients use our data to reach out to people. But what happened was when we first launched in 2007, clients were using us as a more of a mailing database, and were using us to do, you know, 1, 2, 3,000 email blasts. But now what's happened is that our database is being used for less quantitative and more qualitative, that people are selecting 10, 15, 20 different companies that they do a very deep dive into in terms of research and stuff like that. And then, like your contact was talking about, then start to do a more personalized approach and do a kind of a more 360 approach whereby, you know, they're reaching out to them through LinkedIn, they're maybe engaging with them on Twitter, you know, they're doing all sorts of different, going in from all these different touch points and showing them that they have an understanding of the market. And I think this whole, you know, filling in, you know, just dropping people's names into a template, an email template, and sending it out, you might just as well, you know, just knock that on the head. That's not going to go anywhere, certainly for next year.
No, you know what? It's just, a couple other clients shared, you know, that they like to see samples of work for inspiration, like we all do, and content that makes her smarter as a marketer. And right. I think that's that personalization that you're talking about. And other clients said to me, I want to see relevant case histories, something that I can say, maybe it touches a problem or scratches an itch or whatever you want to do, you know. But, you know, it's something that makes them smarter and something that's personalized. And the other thing is they want to see that initiative that you, some sweat equity that you've done some, that research, as opposed to the easy way out. Right.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's probably, you know, this, it is important, but I mean, I just want to circle back onto the sort of social media aspect of things, because, I had a series of very interesting conversations with a lady that I'm actually interviewing next week, and her name is Mei King Sang, or Mei King T, as she likes to call herself. She started a business called FOMO, and I thought you'd love this, Hank. All right, FOMO, fear of missing out. Okay, but it's a social media business, and what that does, what FOMO does, is generate demand for things like products, tickets, and events, or whatever, you know. While the sort of, she uses her influencer skills. So while the principle of what she's been doing has been around for years, that this isn't a business that anyone can do. You actually need to have a personality and a following. You need to have a network of people, you know, very similar to the way that you work. And this was why I thought it was interesting, because it uses exactly the same mechanism. So the you putting it into terms for, you know, for your business, is that you would be able to say, well, I've got 20,000 followers, and they, you know, they basically buy into what I, you know, sort of things that I say, and they download my articles and stuff like that. And you can bring that power to a brand or to an agency or to a client or whatever, and you start to use your influence to be able to help them do their job. So you're bringing something useful to them. That could be a discussion, it could be product sampling, it could be asking them for, you know, your client asks you questions about, you know, do you think this is a good fit, like Asa Abloy, do you think this looks good for a bathroom? I don't know, I can ask my people. And so that's the way that things are starting to work now, I think. I mean, do you reckon that's going to sort of take hold? I mean, can you see yourself working more in that direction?
Yeah, you know, it's not easy. It's not, even though I've got all this content, it's not shooting fish in a barrel. You know, I'm not getting 15,000 emails every day saying, sure, I loved your article, right? But I would tell you, let me start with some fundamentals. If you were chasing those 20 clients in those verticals, have somebody at your agency for sure follow them everywhere on social media and engage with them. And I do that, you know, like if MTech does something out on Instagram, I'll put, you know, say lovely or something like that, or applause, you know, and have your people do that. Because if that's getting monitored by somebody at the client side, they'll see that you're engaged and you're helping them and share. And I'll say, hey, great piece of advice or whatever. The other thing I have found now, there's a lot of, obviously, webinars, and many I've engaged with. I had many had, you know, VPs. There's one coming up, and it's like leading women in the automotive industry. And you can Google it, and it's people from Nissan, Hyundai, Cadillac, and all women, senior positions. So I sign up for that webinar. And one way I engage with that, and I use it, then I send an email out to them, you know, after the webinar, or, you know, or if they're going to say, hey, I really enjoyed your comments. And I will get some people engaging with me. It's not 100%, but maybe 20%. And I think it's a two-way street. It's organic. You know, you have to be there and, pardon me, nurturing it. You know, it isn't just like, oh, I like this. You know, you have to bring more game, more yes. game into it. But in terms of the able to, yeah, I think, you know, if you have your list of 20 clients, yeah, and follow them on social media, engage with them on social media, I think eventually you'll get credit with that. Read everything about what, you know, anything that they put out. Like, my bottom line thought is, yes, it works.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that, Hank. The topic that's very relevant at the moment is the news that's knocking around that we touched on earlier about the vaccine coming along. And sure. I mean, I think at the moment we're looking at two. Are you going to take it as soon as it's available?
100%. First day I can get it, I'll get it.
Really? Okay.
You know, I remember... Yeah, because, you know, I remember growing up in Canada, I remember polio, you know, and sure. I think we might have talked about that. And that was scary because there are kids in a class that, you know, had, braces. And the other thing, my wife is a pharma rep, right? So I'm a big believer in science. And so I will definitely take it. I know I have friends that are more hesitant, you know.
Right.
And you know how politicized everything is here in the U.S., you know, where people aren't going to take it because it's Bill Gates. He's trying to put a chip in our brains to control us. You know, I don't know why Bill Gates, who hangs around with very smart people, would want to put chips in brains of a lot of stupid people. As if that would put any enjoyment in his life. You know what I mean? I could talk to, you know, the leaders of any country in the world and. I'm pro that, but hey, I read a paper. I read a Spanish paper this morning on peace in English, and it said, you know, 25% of Spaniards, only 25% of Spaniards will take it.
Well, this brings me on to the next part of that. Okay, so, you know, you might rush out and get yourself vaccinated, and obviously that's something that we've talked about in the Smith household as well, and we're all for it. But the thing is, can we trust that everybody else has? Because one of the important things to bear in mind about all this is that just because you've got a vaccine, just because you've been vaccinated, doesn't mean that you can't pass it on to somebody else. So somebody right. that hasn't been vaccinated, or somebody that might be vulnerable, and we still don't know how long the vaccination is going to last for. So does this now mean that from now on, I mean, I'm assuming now that the events industry is going to be forever compromised as a result of this? You're never going to be able to get 3,000 people together in a room.
I think it'll be different forever, you know, or for a long time, until they test and, you know, like it's New Zealand and, you know, nobody's had it for 3 months, right?
Right.
You know, and they got 40,000 at a rugby game, right? And now I see in some the stadiums in the UK, they might let in 4,000. I think, let's say, if you go to the theater, which the seat next to you will be empty, right? And there'll be more spacing and people will wear masks until it gets to a point where the incidences are very low. So I think in the initial, first quarter, probably first half of next year, it'll be like that first gentleman that I shared, you know, where the KBIS showed that they're looking at a way to connect with the audience when they're virtually, right?
Right.
And then maybe we will have, you know, and maybe the shows, or maybe it'll be, you know, like a big, it'll be a limited attendance or only so much at that time. So many people in per hour, or your time will be scheduled and you only have an hour and a half. It's like this beautiful restaurant I love in Laguna, and it's right on the water, and they have a bar area, and and they don't turn off the lights, turn on the lights at night when the sunset, because the oranges and the reds will fill the room, right? And it's eight people in there, and it could only, and they're staggered for an hour and a half, 90 minutes max.
Well, I think, you know, the restaurant industry is going to be, I mean, we've had several discussions on the shows about the restaurant industry, and I think that There's a large argument for the fact that we've had too many restaurants in the United States for too long, and maybe now we're going to get to a situation where going out is truly something, but going out to eat is something special that you get rather than something you could make at home. But I mean, one of the interesting things that came up, I think one thing that's come out of all this is that people are more receptive to having meetings when you can do them online, when you don't actually have to have a face-to-face meeting. So there's going to be different levels now. I think we've now achieved a new level of credibility with the video meetings now, in that, you know, a face-to-face meeting might be the third meeting that you have, given the fact that you've had two video meetings. And, you know, this is really about you've already established the chemistry. You've already established that there is a need, and this isn't just a fishing exercise, you know. And then the third meeting or the final meeting is going to be basically for the actual in-person signing of a contract, shaking of a hand or bowing or namasteing or whatever, fist bumps, yeah. And so I think that we've now got an extra level of meetings in there now, which could be, I think, could be quite interesting for people like you and me in the new business industry, you know, of being able to say, okay, well, you know, we're sort of, the first two meetings are going to be by video.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing is, don't let yourself get homogenized. But there's ways to connect on video. A lot of people say Zoom call is great, right? But if I was going to present my agency's capabilities, you know, would I do it with a webinar? And, you know, and then let's go to the slide deck like everybody else. No, what I would do is I'd get into an empty studio, and there are plenty, or your old office, and I'd shoot a video of it, taking that video and making it a little bit more theatrical. I think people respond to that performance. I think they would enjoy that. So, I think the other thing is everybody's got a different toleration. We talked about this last time, I believe, too. You know, some people will go out for a coffee. Some people won't leave their house. And you have to find the right personality, and you're not going to get that in a database.
Yeah. Well, something else that came up. I mean, you shared some of the feedback that you had from clients and stuff on email, and I think that one thing that was quite interesting was that there's definitely a feeling that buyers or on the procurement side of things, CMOs, are only really going to be reaching out to agencies when there is actually a direct need. That's going to cut down on the agency shopping. And so there's going to be less kind of browsing and more just purchasing. But if that is the case, I mean, it's worth bearing in mind that when you know, from a business development perspective, when we get a buying signal, you've got to be all over it, haven't you?
Yeah. And I think even before that, you know, when they're at that point and they're reaching out to the agencies, do they know you? Do they know that you exist? And that is, again, going back, not by mass emails that get deleted, or every inbound email at a client usually has this message that I get. This is from an outside source. Be careful. Don't download. Don't do this.
Sure. Right?
So if you've got to have that relationship, so you are on their in their consideration set. It's just like we talk about with agencies talk to clients. We've got to move you up into the prospect's consideration set. So you have to be there, and you have to be relevant.
Well, okay. So another one that came up that I thought was very useful that you showed me was that about the idea of networking, which we alluded to right at the very start of it, and that CMOs are kind of looking to build relationships, and you know this, and you've already said this, but they're looking to build relationships through their own personal network. Now, as far as I can tell, this is harking back to the old days of marketing directors and lead marketers, where you weren't brought into a company because you could just buy things. That wasn't the point of it. What you did when you came into a when you came into an agency or came into a company was you bought a whole community of contacts with you that you could leverage. So you knew people in agencies, you knew people at printers, and back in the old days, that there were people in various suppliers in your own personal supply chain that you could rely on, that you bring with you. So I think that this kind of this network building is going to take on a new form now, and that CMOs are going to, it's going to be important to be on a CMO's supplier list regardless of where they are, because they'll bring you with them when they move into new positions. Do you think?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, when I talk to other agencies, they say, when on that referral piece, they say, yeah, we used to work with them. They went to another company and they called us up to do a project.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, you know, agencies have to be very careful of, when you get a new client, that's when you're most vulnerable, because they're coming in with those connections and those trust relationships. So you have to double down on servicing them, making sure, especially in this age where you might not be able to meet them personally, you know, and over-service them. And so they don't automatically go to their network of existing contacts.
True. Good point. So, I mean, you're talking from the other side about actually sort of winning the hearts and minds of new clients as well. But I think, you know, do you think that CMOs now, I mean, are the job where you used to have a CMO that would come in and look at all the existing relationships and just make the best purchase possible, given that a CMO now has the extra responsibility of having to leverage their own personal relationships and their own business relationships in order to do the best job?
Yes. You know, I'm going to answer that a little bit differently, because I'm not 100% sure. And it might be a segue and take off stride. One of the other danger points I see out there for agencies, and I got a response back from a client, and then I'll elaborate on it, is a lot of them are building up their own internal agencies, right?
Right.
They in-house, because then they don't have to go out to other people. And I got a comment back from one client, said, I imagine during these times that clients are also building their own resources. And I got a solicitation yesterday, you know, like when I was one of the 1,000, and it's actually from a company. And what they do is they help clients set up internal agencies.
Right.
They're a resource base. And I've known two companies like that I've seen, that what they do, hey, Mr. Klein, here's what we're going to do. You don't need an agency. You need an in-house agency. And we will help you create that. We'll give you processes. We'll give you systems. So that's...
What are your feelings about internal agencies?
Well, I think, you know what, if you're a production based who is in the technology, they have value added resellers, they might have to just have an ad and change little addresses and everything like that. Do you really need an agency for that? Probably
right.
Not. You can have an internal production person, right?
Right.
And, you know, and that's why when I said that expression, but when agencies thrive, when they do things that clients can't do. Right. You know, if it's making a simple production change, you can get that done. You can get that outsourced, whatever. It's easy. But doing a, you know, creating a 3D or CGI new TV commercial or something for your trade show booth, or, you know, or that clients can't do.
Sure.
Clients can't do that. You know, that's a specialty skill.
The reason I asked that was because I actually cut my teeth in the agency world and in an in-house agency that was owned by a big conglomerate, and we became as an in-house agency, we became very uncreative. You know, because
yes, that
because we weren't being pushed in the way that an outside agency is always being pushed to innovate and to specialize and to be better every time. As an in-house agency, I think you can become very complacent. But you bring in a good point, which is there's a time and a place for an in-house agency. So, you know, you have an in-house agency if a lot of your creative isn't actual real creative. It's churn work. It's stuff that needs iterations rather than innovation. And you use your agency for the big stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, my bias would be in-house agencies aren't as creative and you're not going to get the big idea there and you're not going to get the big creative talent. However, on production oriented, as I said, or, you know, or simple things, it's the same thing like in social media, you know, why social media is in a majority handled by, in many cases, maybe is handled by the client, you know,
that, yeah.
Can, you know, do you need an agency to buy Facebook ads? You know, you could probably get somebody internally that, you know, you bring on board, you pay them whatever, and they could do your Facebook ads, right?
Exactly.
Now, the content creation, maybe you outsource, you know, even for the Facebook ad, or if it was a posting that you might need the content from the agency and you need the writing and that technical expertise.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because an agency can be called upon to do some really good creative stuff and then pass that hand that over to an in-house team, you know, because there are so many levels that, you know, you've got. For example, I mean, one of the areas that I'm focusing this discussion on is, for example, with social media, where the in-house person running social media might actually have a much, much better feel for the culture of the company than an external person, an external agency would. And so, you know, there are opportunities for both to work, you know, hand in hand, which I think could be quite interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It reminds me of a story I don't want to repeat, but a client I got a review last year, and somebody sent out a social media text that was about letters to Santa that turned out to be picked up by every news. It was awful. You know, I don't even want to get into the details. It was so bad. And you know what? And you can't retract it. You know what I mean? You can't take it back in many categories.
There was that famous one about Chrysler, which I thought was a great example of how it could all go completely wrong, which was the person at Chrysler's social media department actually accidentally used Chrysler's own Twitter feed to put out a tweet that said, "Why is everybody in Detroit such shitty drivers?" You know.
Yes. Which, so let me give you some other thoughts, though.
Fantastic idea. But okay, so well, go on. Yes.
Let me give you some thoughts. So let's talk about some of the social media mediums, okay? First, there's LinkedIn. I can't tell you how many clients that even when I reach out to them will, and people overall, LinkedIn maybe is getting stale for some people, where I'll reach out to them through LinkedIn because it was easier for me, and they'll say, I hardly ever go on LinkedIn.
Right.
So how engaged are they in those mediums? The other thing that we talked about is, you know, following them in other places, right? I'll give you some thoughts. You know what? Most clients probably want, connecting them, following with them, dialoguing with them, knowing what kind of content that they send out might give you some ideas about how to reach out to them. You know, if they're sending out things about safety, then you know that that's a hot button for them, and maybe you can get some data to support that, right? If I saw that in your feeds. I think, though, if you talk about other things like TikTok, most clients would probably, if you said, here's our point of view, we have a short video, a thought piece on how to leverage TikTok for your brand.
Right.
And, you know, it's a way in the door. And then the other piece, half a dozen clients that I connected with said, I want to see thought leadership. So if they check out, I Google your agency, what do I see? What comes up? Your address or your most recent blog or video on a topic of interest,
right?
So absolutely. It's your thought leadership, you know?
Okay. All right. Well, Hank, thank you very much. I think thank you very much for all your kind of research and hard work for that. That I'm sure we'll be revisiting you again in the new year. So that's great. And I appreciate you taking some time for all this. So thank you very much for polling all your people, and I'd like to thank them as well for participating in the whole thing. So that's great. So
Can I just tell you a little bit about that? A little bit for me, it's new business, because probably three or four of them said I'd love to have a copy of the podcast, right? And eventually, what do I want to do? And somebody's relationship is I've done agency reviews for them,
right?
Or I want to do agency reviews for them. So it's a little bit like, this is my thought leadership. When I post this on LinkedIn, I said I was on a podcast about new business.
So you've cunningly used my podcast so you could put yourself out there. What?
Yes. Yes.
That was very subtle.
No, but you know what? It's another way. It says yeah, I'm engaged. You know what I mean? I'm vibrant. I'm on a podcast that reaches largely an audience in the UK. Wow. So no, but I enjoy it. Right. It was my way to network with my community.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. Well, talking of your wisdom, I still have your copy of Hankisms, which you kindly sent me, which is fantastic. And we're going to pick randomly because it's Christmas time. All right. We're going to do a lucky draw. Okay. I'm going to flick through the book. Okay. You tell me when to stop, and whichever one we land on, I'm going to get you to explain. Okay, ready? Ready? Go.
Stop.
Oh, stop. Ah, here we go. Networking internally creates career insurance.
Absolutely.
Explain.
You know what? I think that came from when I worked at JWT once in Chicago, and there were 700 people. You know what I mean? You have to be known, right? You have to know. People have to know who you are. And I used to do, have a presentation, and that slide came out. You know, it was a networking presentation.
Right.
And, you know, we've got the pandemic. We've had the Great Recession. We've had the dot-com bust. There's always these cyclical times, right? And there's the game of it's basically this. Sometimes you end up in a situation where there's only one chair and two capable people, and you can call it a game of musical chairs. Who gets to sit down, right? And I used to say, if I was talking about new business or about networking, who gets to sit down, the finder or the grinder? The inside person or the outside person? And I would say it's the finder and it's the outside person, because they offer the promise of potential revenue. So they get to sit in that chair and they have the career insurance. And I think that is, you know what, I think it's important, especially in larger agencies. So that was my thought on that.
That's great. That's fantastic. That's excellent Hankism there. So I think we'll have to do that one again. That's great. I love the randomness of that. But okay. So now looking forward to the new year. Okay. I need to ask you, 2021, what's your wish for 2021, Hank?
I wish, that this pandemic starts to erode. It'll take time. I'm very optimistic. Like I said, you know, we've got some stability. You've got agencies adapting to the new normal. And the ones that will adapt the quickest and with the best ideas will survive and they'll grow. And the people that will plod along and try to do it the old way aren't going to do it as well. I think consumer behavior will totally change. That will change, just like in a rush, but it'll gradually come back. And I think that the first thing that clients will do is initiate projects and ideas that come from agencies that have a very immediate return and aren't for, aren't for the long runway, you know, something that's going to monetize very, very quickly because they're going to be cautious. And then I think, I think travel will return. Let's go to travel. Let's talk about that. I think travel will return slowly. It'll be different. I think that middle seat will still be very important to consumers. I think how we check in, but you can already see airlines are testing things like COVID testing at the airport, COVID testing when you land. Alitalia is doing that. They might next week they're going to start. So you'll see a lot of those safety concerns will still be important to consumers. I think when you get on a flight, everybody will be wearing a mask. Or even the 20% that don't, people won't care about them, but they're going to say, for me, I'm wearing a mask. You know what I mean? Maybe it's seating will get adjusted, I remember when it was, you could be smoke on an airplane, smoking or non-smoking on an airplane. Yes. Years ago, right? Now it'll be, are you in the mask-wearing section or non-mask-wearing section?
There shouldn't be a non-mask-wearing section. That's the whole point.
Yeah. I think it'll come back. I think certain areas will come back faster than others, right? We already see opportunities of hope. Look how real estate is doing extremely well in the U.S., Canada, other places. I talked to my automotive client. They said, we're not having a bad year at all. We're not having a bad year.
Yeah.
And so I think depending on the sector and, everybody's got their own consumers. We're not uniform. We're not one little huge mass. Right. Some people are more risk tolerant than others. There'll still be people that are early adopters. And if they get a vaccine, they'll probably say, I'll travel. It may be March, April, May, June, July. Right. And there'd be some people that aren't going to go on a plane for 2 years.
I think I'll put myself in that bracket.
I'm looking at May, June next year,
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Okay. All right, Hank. Well, thank you very much. Now, before we go, I was going to ask you for is there a particular Christmas song that you love?
And one thing I got to tell you before that, when you said Christmas, the last two Christmases we spent in London. So all I was thinking about is all those lights and everything.
Yes.
But I love Diana Krall, fellow Canadian. She's married to Elvis Costello, and she has some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Christmas. Yeah. For a fire, and some old wine, put on a little Diana Krall for me. She covers the classics, and I think that's real good. So I would recommend her.
We're going to spin up the old turntable, okay? And before we go, I'm going to wish all my clients, colleagues, and friends a Merry Christmas and a happy, successful, healthy New Year. And so just bear with me, and then we'll talk on the other side of it. So to all of the guests that have appeared on the Fuel podcast, I wish you a very Merry Christmas and a successful and healthy 2021. This list includes Phil Lewis, Ben Potter, Tom Cheesewright, Alex Kirkpatrick, Andres Corrin, Lucy Mann and Katie Horvath of Cherry, Dan Sudron of The Future Factory, Ian Miller of Procure, Martin Galton, Greg Jordan and Tim Hollins of Beehive Creative, Sean King of The King Collective, Gordon Lee, The Pitch Doctor, Steve Fair, yes, the Steve Fair, Natasha Ellard-Shufield, Mythbuster, Steve Cheliotis of the Centre for Brand Analysis, Ian Truscott from Rockstar CMO, artist Vic Lee and his wonderful book Corona Diary 2020, John Ashton of Right Arm, Neil Bentley of Camflare, Katrina Sargent of BizBuzz Network, Phil Lewis again, Bill Walsgrove, the fabulous Bill Walsgrove, Ian Humphries from No Camo, Isabel Arrowsmith from PRCA Latin America, Lynette St. Quentin of Barrett Homes, John Pummel of Connection Bridge, and Jack Pummel for arranging it, Jeremy Davis for his show and for all the wonderful comedy monologues, some chap called Hank Blank. What a wonderful opportunity this has been, Hank. Thank you so much for taking part in the show. I really do appreciate you.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. Nick Galanides, film director and music impresario. Andy Farmer of digital agency Orm. Zita McMillan of Predictive Black. Ben Potter, again. Matt Brown of Digital Kung Fu and The Matt Brown Show in South Africa. Dines of Studio Bluck, Jeff Swan from Rev Up 90, we're nearly there, including Martin Shaw, Mavis Boniface and Matt Bullard for the phone-in, Kieran S. Lawler of digital marketing agency Hallam, Julian Balding of the Network One agency group, Father John Taylor, Kunal Patani of Digital Human, Lucy Mann of Gunpowder Consulting and the Small Spark Theory podcast, and to Vic Horton for his wonderful desktop research. Again, Hank, I'd like to give thanks to you. I'm so glad that we got to do this, and I'm glad you survived the pandemic, all the wildfires, and that crazy dude at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Any thanks you'd like to give, Hank?
I'm thankful for the network and the way you came into my life, found me, and I've had an opportunity to engage with a lot of people, and maybe it's my way from the UK, and we've had some Zoom calls, and it's, you know, my way of being there since I can't travel. So I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for that optimism. I feel optimism for a couple of reasons that you suggested, you know. I'm optimistic. I've seen this before, and I'm optimistic that we will emerge from it.
Oh. Well, that's great, Hank. Well, we've had a blast, haven't we? It's been good fun, and it's always the guest that makes it, and I do appreciate you for coming on, and this is your third one, so let's go for number four in the new year. So we're off now to do some Christmas things. What is it you do on Christmas Day, Hank? What's your Christmas Day look like?
Oh, my Christmas Day, I mentioned I would have been flying on a plane and then going the next day for some Boxing Day sales, you know, at Selfridges, and I can't do that. So this year, it'll be a little quieter, you know, and we'll probably start our day going down to the ocean and looking at the waves and being appreciative for everything that we have. So this year is a little different, be a little smaller. Christmas is a time for when it's very easy for me to be grateful. And I'm going to relish that.
A bit more introspective this time around.
Yes.
Indeed. Well, I am going to eat my weight in baked goods and then spend the next year running it off. So that's how I'm going to do it. Y'all have a great Yule, and so for now, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
And as Hank climbs aboard his sleigh and heads for sunny California, we bid you all a very Merry Christmas. Unless, of course, you're listening to this on catch-up and it's the middle of June or something. In which case, isn't it funny how we were all so worried about Brexit and didn't realise what a great man Boris Johnson actually is? My special thanks to the team. That's Donna, Matt, Barney, Bob and Vic. It's been a great year, 43 episodes under our belt, and we'll get the hang of it by the time we make a century. Thank you so much for listening, downloading, emailing and encouraging. And we'll be back in January, and we're turning it up to volume 11 with a stellar lineup of guests to demonstrate that The Fuel is the number one sales podcast for the business development industry. So I'm a Smith called Keith signing off for 2020, and I'll see you on the flip side in 2021. Have a Merry Christmas and a much happier New Year. Bye, everyone.